Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, January 16th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, new effort to plan for last-mile broadband connection in Humboldt, protest against ICE in Arcata Plaza last week, and Ray Hamill with the sports reports. Stay tuned, those stories and more, coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
Humboldt County supervisors have been told of plans to help outlying communities like Benbow, Alder Point, Miranda, Wiyot, Shelter Cove, and several others plan for broadband internet service. Daniel Mintz reports.
So-called last-mile broadband internet connections to specific communities in Humboldt County have yet to be made, but new funding will help those communities come up with shovel-ready plans for potential connection grants. At its January 13th meeting, Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors got an update on the county's broadband service development and remaining needs. Connie Stewart, Executive Director of Initiatives at Cal Poly Humboldt, has been working on broadband development for years, and she explained how middle-mile regional connections have been built or funded, and how the next step, last-mile connections, is in the works.
We set out to do several middle miles, 299, 101. What we called the Y, which was kind of the Bald Hills Road and tribal regions to the east of us, and then also down the coast of Highway 1 as well, because at the time we were working closely with Mendocino, and then across Highway 36. Well, I'm pleased to report that all of the middle miles that we had envisioned in that plan so long ago are now either built or funded and on the way to being built. So that, it's taken a long time. We've met many providers on the way that have not been able to do it because they're challenging builds throughout our region. All of those middle miles are funded. And now we get to turn to the really fun part of trying to figure out how to get this actually to your home at a reasonable price.
Stewart said HOOPA has gotten an astounding $40 million grant for last mile connections along Route 299 and in Willow Creek. But many communities, including those in southern Humboldt, don't have last mile connections or projects coming. But there's an effort afoot to change that. Brian Court, a senior operations director from a company called Brightscape Networks, talked about a grant to help those communities develop last mile connection plans that will make them competitive for funding.
So working with Cal Poly, we were awarded $1 million from the United States Department of Agriculture to begin working on getting this connectivity to the most needy, or the communities in Humboldt and Trinity counties that need it most. It's important to understand that the purpose of the grant is not to provide broadband per se, both because that's not what the USDA was funding and because $1 million isn't nearly enough money to do that. But what we expect to do is to be able to tee up each of these communities for success in future funding rounds. When these funding opportunities come along, they often have a very short time frame. It's often very difficult for communities to apply successfully for these opportunities because the upfront planning hasn't been done. That's what we believe we can offer these communities, is we can work in conjunction with the experts on the ground, the community leaders, the people who already know these communities backwards and forwards, to provide near shovel-ready plans so that as funding opportunities do become available, all of the legwork has been done and we'll have information ready to plug into those applications and unlock that funding.
Chris Crandall, a higher education specialist working on community coordination, noted the importance of broadband service and its absence in some areas, saying, quote, "We're living in an AI age and many of our residents don't even have internet." Supervisors welcomed the update, with Supervisor Rex Bone crediting Stewart for her years of work, which yielded results in the Ferndale, Petrolia, and Honeydew areas in his district. Board Chair Mike Wilson commented on how the broadband quest seeks to fix initial shortcomings.
We first got fiber here 20, 25 years ago. It went through communities that didn't get the service. Yeah, they didn't get connected, which was really annoying to a lot of folks. And I'm glad to hear that folks in Garberville and Redway are now receiving service they should have gotten 2 decades ago. That being said, it's only because of the efforts of the folks that have been working since 2005, as Connie says. And I remember those first meetings at the community center in Arcata. And it's just amazing we've gotten this far. And I'm looking forward to how we move forward. I'm just grateful. I actually have competing services in my neighborhood now, which is great.
The time frame of the last mile planning is 2 years and includes surveys, mapping, development of actionable strategies in each community, and assistance with last mile grant applications. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Civil Air Patrol plans to test loudspeakers over Humboldt-Del Norte coastlines on Saturday. Sheriff's Public Information Officer Aaron Inskip reads the press release.
The Civil Air Patrol, in coordination with the Office of Emergency Services for Humboldt and Del Norte counties, intends to deploy one small airplane on a north-to-south coastline flight tomorrow, Saturday, January 17th. The flight is an exercise to train personnel and to test loudspeakers that might be used in a distant source tsunami warning situation, such as the 2011 undersea 9.0 magnitude earthquake and tsunami that first struck Japan and then sent dangerous waves onto our shores hours later. The test flight is expected to begin at the Oregon state line at about 11:30 a.m., cross into Humboldt County at about 12:20 p.m., and leave the coastline just south of Shelter Cove at about 1:40 p.m. The plane's loudspeaker system will announce that the flight is a test of the Civil Air Patrol's public address system and reference the County of Office of Emergency Services. The Saturday flight will utilize a brightly painted red, white, and blue single propeller airplane with the letters CAP prominently visible under the wings. Similar Civil Air Patrol loudspeaker test flights took place in 2018, 2021, 2022 with the coordination from coastal counties, the National Weather Service, Eureka Office, and the Redwood Coast Tsunami Work Group. Bad weather or technical problems may cause the test flight to be rescheduled. During a real tsunami warning, if the distance from the earthquake provided adequate time to mobilize an air crew and fly the plane to our coast, the audible announcement would instruct beachgoers to head inland or to go to high ground and seek further information from the local Office of Emergency Services. Citizens' feedback, comments, and recordings of this test flight may be submitted online to local Office of Emergency Services as follows. The Del Norte County Office of Emergency Services, their website, www.preparedelnorte.com/givefeedback. Humboldt County Office of Emergency Services, their email address is oes@co.humboldt.ca.us. The Civil Air Patrol is a volunteer-operated auxiliary of the U.S. Air Force and an important resource for a variety of emergency missions, including searches for missing aircraft, search and rescue operations, damage assessment, and disaster relief. For more information about the Civil Air Patrol, visit GOCIVALRPATROL.com. Go Civil Air Patrol.
Last Sunday, a protest was organized at the Arcata Plaza against the killing of Renee Good and ICE raids. KMOD reporter Nat Cardos spoke with the organizer for more about how it went and the further escalation of ICE enforcement. Last Sunday, on January 11th, protesters gathered in the Arcata Plaza against Immigration Customs Enforcement, or ICE, and the recent killing of Renee Good by an ICE agent in Minneapolis, Minnesota, earlier in the week. Protesters arrived with handmade signs and upside-down U.S. flags at the demonstration, vocalizing their upset at the increase of ICE activity throughout the country. In 2025, ICE deported approximately 622,000 individuals, which is over double the amount deported just a year prior in 2024, which was about 271,484. This is due to the Trump administration's mass deportation agenda that has been under scrutiny since taking office earlier last year. KMUD reporter Nat Cardo spoke with Jacob Sani, a local educator, U.S. Army veteran, and organizer of the protest, for more about why he organized the event.
You know, after independently reviewing resources by, you know, the American Immigration Lawyers Association, the federal government's ICE.gov website, numerous reports across various different media outlets, I think there is a very nuanced situation happening. I think people activated to do something should really aim to identify what their feelings and thoughts are and come up with a clear picture of what disturbs them about this so much. And all of that is to say, I feel compelled, you know, to create a place for people to be able to express that. It kind of came to a tipping point, because I've seen this happen numerous times in the last few years, as we've, you know, the presidency has changed hands and how it's kind of weaved into, in and out of different situations between presidencies. I just really feel compelled to place our current situations into historical context as well, just as an educator.
Many criticized the ICE raids as unconstitutional, like the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, who filed a lawsuit challenging the federal government's use of unlawful immigration enforcement tactics, specifically in Los Angeles, California. The lawsuit Vasquez-Perdomo v. Noem argues that their tactics violate the Fourth Amendment rights, which protects people from unreasonable searches and seizures by the government without warrants based on probable cause. Others draw parallels between the federal government's actions and fascism from the 20th century.
When teaching, I am a history teacher. I teach at the K-12 level. I have taught and studied and devoted a lot of my life to determining causes of historical events. So, you know, namely, one of the events that I teach is about World War II, about the Holocaust, about different things like that, and the rise of fascism. And so that is, I'm not saying that these are direct parallels, but what I'm seeing right now with the way that the federal government is running their operations, in terms of these systems in place, they tend to rhyme a little bit, to put it lightly. They tend to rhyme with some of the developments seen in Nazi Germany. And I, after studying this for so many years, you know, devoting my life to historical, you know, context and framing it for students, it's pretty, how do I say this? It's alarming to see it as a history educator with what's happening right now. And so I think that's really what has also awoken that within me.
As a first-time organizer, Sony was able to get people to come out by the dozens and was able to engage with the community with discussions about organizing and the issue of ICE raids.
Yeah, so the protest went well. It was honestly a very, you know, a good turnout. You know, we had, you know, we were in the dozens of people. So, you know, obviously not, you know, we're not talking about like taking over the plaza or like, you know, a huge, huge turnout in terms of like tons of people. But many people that I know and that people who are supporting this, this cause to protest against ICE, showed up, and we were able to get attention. People were driving by honking horns, and we were able to engage with some people in the community who had questions. We had Centro del Pueblo We had volunteers come and we were talking about resources. And so that was a really cool thing to see. One thing that I found really, really amazing was, to be honest with you, it was a very nerve-wracking experience. Putting myself in that position of trying to organize folks for coming together to illuminate injustices, seeing people who have been doing this for any amount of time, some folks that had been doing this since, you know, the Vietnam era, they were all very open and had great advice and were very, very encouraging, which honestly was a huge takeaway. And if anybody was to try to organize for the first time, Humboldt is a really great place to do that, because there are a lot of, you know, we are being an isolated, you know, rural area. We double down on community, and I think it's important to recognize that folks that have been organizing for a long time are more than willing to help out and to support. And that was really amazing to see.
Aside from organizing, Sony has been working towards educating people on resources available to them if ICE ever comes knocking, one being Central del Pueblo's Rapid Response Network.
So Central del Pueblo, they were there. They are the leading the effort for what's known as the Rapid Response Network. So they have established a hotline for folks who are at risk of detention or you know, being detained by ICE agents or immigration. And so that was for Humboldt County. There are different rapid response networks across California, and you can easily find those online by just typing in rapid response network. The hotline number is 707-200-8091. And that is, if you are in need of help, there are people on the line who can help you if you are in a serious situation involving ICE. So the next one would be a really great resource is the American Immigration Lawyers Association. And they provide all sorts of advice on their website. Obviously, you know, if you need legal advice, then that's kind of a different story, but they have printable resources on their website. They have printable wallet cards that have your rights listed on there, both in English and Spanish. And I think they have a couple of other languages as well. But those are two resources, just two of many. There are numerous agencies out there, like First Five, Humboldt. You know, you have the California Collaborative for Immigrant Justice, which is where that rapid response hotline comes from. And then there's, you know, there's Humboldt County offers, you know, cash assistance for refugees. And it just takes, you know, fortunately in the age of technology that we live in, you know, just even just a quick Google search can afford you so many amazing opportunities if you have means to do so. So that's kind of my aim, you know, aside from organizing, was to try and provide, you know, a place for resources and things like that.
Sony says he plans to organize more protests in the future and encourages others to take action where they can.
I just wanted to say that, you know, I feel that, you know, I feel that I can excel at determining resources for people, those affected by detainment or, you know, potential arrest. I think many folks feel a daunting sense of tackling everything about what is happening, everything about the topic. It's such a large, encroaching issue to many people. It can be debilitating to focus on the larger picture. instead of doing what you can. I think if you can't organize a protest, you can attend one. If you can't attend a protest, you can spread the word about it. You know, if you can't spread the word about it, you can at least inform yourself. You know, it comes in layers. So that's just what I have to say for folks who may be feeling a little bit overwhelmed, you know, calling to action. We can't all do everything as individuals. So just anything that anyone can do is a help. So that's really where I'm coming from.
On Saturday, January 17th, there will be another protest in Eureka from 12 to 2 p.m. at the Eureka City Courthouse. The protest can be found on the Women's March website as Humboldt County Free America Rally. There will potentially be music and participation from groups like the Raging Grannies and the Humboldt Democracy Connections. And Ray Hamill with this week's sports report.
The McKinleyville Panthers have taken control of the race for the Big 5 Championship in boys basketball after escaping Fortuna with a hard-fought win this week. Hello and welcome to this week's K-Mud News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Panthers in just a moment as we break down all of the big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest high school boys and girls basketball, why it was another big week for two of the local college teams, and why it's been a good winter for one local high school girls wrestling team. But first up, the McKinleyville Panthers won a tough battle in boys basketball at Fortuna on Tuesday, rallying in the second half for a 53-52 win. The victory followed wins over Eureka and Del Norte last week, as the Panthers improved to 3-0 in the Big 5 and 12-6 overall. The Panthers are the highest ranked Big 5 team in the North Coast section, coming in at number 40 this week out of 160 teams. With Tuesday's loss, the Fortuna boys dropped to 0-2 in conference and 6-13 overall. Also in the Big 5 this week, the Eureka Loggers rallied late for a 56-54 win over Del Norte on the way to their first conference win. In a game that featured multiple big swings, the Loggers started fast and led by as many as 9 points in the second quarter, but the Warriors would respond with a 15-0 run to close out the half and then held the Loggers scoreless for the opening 4 minutes of the third quarter on the way to opening up a 14-point lead. However, with their backs to the wall and their championship hopes on the line, the Eureka boys rallied late, closing out the game on a 30-14 run to take the victory. With the win, the Loggers improved to 1-1 in the Big 5 and 10-8 overall, while Del Norte dropped to 1-2 and 14-6. The Arcata boys had a bye in conference play earlier this week after a big 71-53 win over Fortuna late last week. Senior guard Luke Lemke exploded for 51 points in that win, with one of the most dominating performances we've seen here on the North Coast in some time. Arcata, which ended a 5-game losing streak with the victory, is now 1-1 in the Big 5 and 7-12 overall. In the Little 4, meanwhile, the St. Bernard's boys got their conference schedule off to a winning start late last week, winning 71-50 at Ferndale. The SB boys followed that with a 60-48 non-conference win at Trinity on Saturday, stretching their winning streak to 12 straight games and improving to 14-1 overall. The Crusaders, who have not lost a game since early December, are the highest-ranked local boys team in the NCS, coming in at number 19 this week. The Ferndale boys would respond to their conference opening loss with a 59-47 win over Fortuna in non-conference action on Saturday, improving to 3-6. Also in the Little 4 last week, the Hoopa boys travelled to Miranda to play South Fork and won 62-60, improving to 9-8 overall, while the Cubs dropped to 8-9. In local girls high school basketball, it was a good week for the Eureka Loggers. The Eureka girls, who have not lost since before Christmas, moved into a tie with Arcata atop the Big 5 standings with a dominating 52-24 win at Del Norte on Wednesday. The Loggers, who also won non-conference road games at University Prep and Shasta over the weekend, are now 2-0 in the Big 5 and 13-4 overall, while Del Norte dropped to 1-2 and 8-7. Also in the Big 5 on Wednesday, Wednesday, the Fortuna girls got a much-needed win in an entertaining and competitive showdown at McKinleyville. The Huskies, who were soundly beaten by Arcata 64-34 in their Big Four opener late last week, closed out Wednesday's game strong, breaking a late tie to win 56-47. With the victory, the Fortuna girls improved to 1-1 in conference and 14-4 overall, while the McKinleyville girls dropped to 0-3 and 10-8. The Arcata girls, who are 2-0 in the Big Five and 9-3 in the season, had a midweek bye in conference play. In the Little Four, St. Bernard's and Hoopa both began conference play with big wins over the weekend. The Crusaders, who are the defending Little Four champs, defeated Ferndale 55-45 on Friday night and followed that with a 54-50 non-conference win at Trinity on Saturday. The win over Trinity stretched St. Bernard's winning streak to 5 straight as the team improved to 12-4. With Friday's loss, the Ferndale girls dropped to 0-1 in the Little Four and 11-7 overall. The Hoopa girls hosted South Fork in their conference opener and won 46-8, improving to 7-11 on the season. The Cubs, however, would respond with back-to-back wins this week to go to 3-12 on the year. South Fork got the better of Potter Valley 37-28 on Tuesday and defeated Anderson Valley 34-29 the following day. The local girls' teams will be back in action on Friday night. In the Big Five, McKinleyville plays at Arcata and Fortuna travels to Eureka, while in the Little Four, South Fork plays at St. Bernard's and Hoopa travels to Ferndale. In local college basketball, meanwhile, it was a busy weekend for the North Coast teams. The Cal Poly Humboldt women edged San Francisco State 63-62 late last week and followed that with a 93-68 win over Cal State East Bay on Saturday. With the two wins, the Jacks improved to 8-0 in conference and 10-4 overall and remained in a three-way tie with Chico State and Cal Poly Pomona for the lead in the conference standings. The Cal Poly Humboldt men were also in action and split their two games, defeating San Francisco State 90-83 and falling to Cal State East Bay 95-53. The Jacks are now 5-3 in conference and 7-7 overall and tied for third in the conference standings. Both Humboldt teams will play at Chico State on Saturday afternoon. Both College of the Redwoods teams were also in action over the weekend and hosted Butte College in a Golden Valley Conference doubleheader on Saturday. The CR women got the action started and lost 73-56, dropping to 1-1 in conference play and 9-9 overall. But the Redwoods men cruised to an 84-64 win. With the victory, Redwoods improved to 2-0 in the GVC and 13-7 overall. Both CR teams will continue conference play on Saturday when they host Syracuse, with the women tipping off at 1 p.m. and the men following at 3. And rounding out a busy week in local sports, it's been a good season so far for the Fortuna girls wrestling team. Over the weekend, the Huskies made the short trip to Eureka to compete in the Loggers North Coast Classic and placed first. The Fortuna girls showcased their team depth, with 6 of their wrestlers placing in the top 4 in their weight divisions. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Michael McCaskill, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Nat Cardos, and Ray Hamill. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org, and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.